KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from San Leandro.
I'm living in Richmond.
Vallejo.
San Jose.
Oakland.
West Oakland.
Coming up, are you suffering from what the American Psychological Association is calling post-election stress disorder?
You read like a couple articles or something like that, and then you kind of get along with your day. And it has a great way of waking you up on the wrong side of the bed.
Then we'll hear how one doula has discovered the true meaning behind her work.
It's not that I don't want to serve the community that can pay me. That's just not who I think needs me.
And we'll get the latest on life in America from our resident foreign correspondent.
Living in San Francisco has been an experience of overwhelming amounts of information. I don't want that.
Except, of course, when it's Cross Currents, right? Fake news, alternative facts, travel bans, reports of Russian connections, the daily deluge of political news from Washington can be overwhelming. And for many people, it's taking a toll. Mental health professionals across California report a stream of patients coming in with anxiety and depression related to the new administration. From Kaiser Health News, Jenny Gold has that story.
Wally Finkston in San Mateo says he's been feeling pretty awful since President Donald Trump was elected.
Primarily angry, a little depressed. It's been stressful. It's definitely not something I'm used to.
Finkston, who's 35, says he's not a Democrat or a Republican. He voted for George W. Bush, but also Barack Obama. He's also a news junkie. But these days, he starts feeling a sense of dread first thing in the morning.
You lay in bed right before you get up and take a shower. You read like a couple articles or something like that, and then you kind of get along with your day. And it has a great way of waking you up on the wrong side of the bed.
Even just going on Facebook makes his heart beat faster.
I have high blood pressure. I mean, that's just a medical condition. I have hypertension. And I could tell this was not a good thing. You know, like this was not helping me.
Finkston has a busy career as a recruiter. He decided to shut down his Facebook page, but not knowing what was going on made him anxious.
I kind of cheated a bit. My dog has a Facebook account too that I ended up using just to kind of see what was going on with friends and that kind of stuff.
Politics-induced anxiety is so common, it's been given an unofficial name, post-election stress disorder. Nearly three-quarters of Democrats report that the outcome of the presidential election is a significant source of stress for them, according to a survey from the American Psychological Association. Michi Fu is a psychologist outside of Los Angeles.
I have clients on both sides of the aisle that claim distress, either feeling ostracized, not being able to lament or celebrate the election results.
She says her Democratic patients especially are coming to the office feeling hopeless and angry.
The sense of hopelessness can lead to what some people would consider symptoms of depression, and that would be things like disturbed sleep, maybe a change in appetite, maybe it'll lead to some social withdrawals.
And some Republicans are upset too. In the same APA survey, a quarter of Republicans reported that the election is a major stressor.
They feel misunderstood. They feel like they're being labeled as racist and bigots.
But many Republicans feel relieved, if not uplifted, by the new president's flurry of executive orders and appointments. Kenneth Liu is active in the San Francisco Republican Party.
I don't know why a lot of people are so stressed or so excitable over a candidate who's pretty much doing what they said they were going to do.
Liu, who's 39, says he's actually been feeling less anxious since Trump took office.
I've been able to take a nice deep breath and relax a little bit, knowing that we now have people on the federal side who are going to bat for us and for our viewpoints where we've been silenced for the last 8 years.
For those who are struggling with post-election anxiety, psychologists recommend limiting the time you spend tracking the news on social media or cable TV. Instead, volunteer for a cause, call a friend, take a walk, read a book.
Derby, sit. Sit. Derby.
For Wally Finkston, speak. His dog, Derby, is the speak. Best stress relief.
Speak. Derby. That's a buff. Derby. Speak.
He says sometimes a few kisses from his dog are all he needs. For Cross Currents, I'm Jenny Gold.
Jenny Gold is with our partner, Kaiser Health News. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Having a baby is a time for big decisions, from creating a birthing plan to choosing a hospital to choosing a midwife or maybe a doula. It can be a lot to take in, especially when many of us don't know what some of the terms even mean. For example, what exactly is a doula? Well, we went to the street to ask some people what they think it means.
A doula is a labor coach, which is a little different than a midwife.
I don't know what that, what's a doula? I just thought that was because when I had my baby, my sister and my mom did mine. So I guess my mother was my doula and my sister. And I was my sister doula because I used to rub her back and, you know, massage her feet and try to get them comfortable. So now I know what a doula is.
Do you know what a doula is, or do you mind just saying what you think one is?
I do not know what a doula is.
I have no idea. You gotta tell me what it is, yeah.
Those were the voices of Lakeisha Jefferson, Anna Warren, and Ty Seals. Okay, so let's hear from an expert. KALW's Leela Day sat down with Dr. Monica McLemore, a nurse scientist at the University of California, San Francisco.
I think I need you to break it down for me first. What is the difference between a doula and a midwife?
Okay. Doulas really are able to be the voice of birthing women during their pregnancy-related care. And so doulas are hired or contracted to work with women in the third trimester of pregnancy. And they spend a lot of time talking about what the woman wants for her birth experience, including who she would like in the room, how she wants to receive information when she's fatigued. Birthing is work, and it's a really powerful time, and it's a really vulnerable time. And so low-income women of color have been utilizing doulas in the more traditional sense, where they're asking for someone to be their advocate.
The midwife, then.
Mm-hmm.
What's the midwife doing, right? And why do we always confuse the two?
Midwives, many of them are nurses, and they are able to provide physiologic care, everything from administration of medications to comfort measures in assisting women during birth. They have clinical training and they are licensed.
Mm-hmm.
But the work that midwives do and the work that doulas do are complementary. They're not competitive.
That was Monica McLemore, a nurse and researcher at UCSF. She spoke with KALW's Leela Day. And now we're going to hear a little more about what it means to be a doula. Here's Leela.
There you go. What do you think?
I like that pom pom.
You like that pom pom?
That's awesome.
I like that pom pom too.
Trayva Riggins is playing with her toddler Charlie at home in Oakland.
No, my ABC.
Riggins works as a server at a restaurant on the weekends, and during the week, she takes care of her daughter.
Yay!
She also recently became a doula.
When I became pregnant, I became really interested in like natural childbirth, and through researching that, I stumbled across like this word doula. I was like, what's that?
Riggins says when she learned about how a doula could help, she wanted to hire one, but financially it seemed impossible.
The going rate for a doula was like $1,500, and there was no way we could afford just an extra $1,500 on top of like getting ready for a baby and just like keeping a roof over our head and paying bills.
She found that for many women, having a doula was considered a luxury item. Studies have shown that having a doula present at birth can decrease the use of medications and C-sections, but most insurance companies don't cover the expense. This difficulty is what led Riggins to want to become one herself.
It almost became an obsession, becoming a doula. I was like, I need to do this. I need to do it immediately.
Riggins says becoming a doula was also about representing women of color, like her.
When you research doulas or like anything you find online, the most mainstream things are white, middle-class women. I was curious, more than anything, I think, to see, like, are there other doulas of color? Like, am I going to be an only when I try to do this? Like, where's my space in it?
In downtown Oakland, Riggins discovered Black Women Birthing Justice and the Birth Justice Project. Both programs were collaborating to offer doula training for women of color and formerly incarcerated women. Linda Jones is one of the coordinators and a doula herself. She's helped birth over 1,000 babies. Jones says there's often a surprised reaction when she mentions her job to other Black women.
They go, people pay for that? And I go, yes, they do.
Jones has been able to laugh about some of the reactions, but she also recognizes a major healthcare disparity. Black Women Birthing Justice found that Black women are rarely educated about using doulas and midwives. They're also least likely to access prenatal care and more likely to deliver by C-section and to suffer untreated postpartum depression. Jones says having the support of a doula can decrease some of these risks for Black mothers.
Having a baby without medication is all about letting your body relax and not fighting your body. And if you're in fear and if you're in pain, you're going to fight against your body.
Feeling fear and pain can make a person's body physically tighten up.
If they can relax, then labor is better because they're not fighting their uterus. Your uterus is a muscle that's trying to open up. And if you tighten it, tighten your body, you're tightening your uterus.
A major part of a doula's job is to help a laboring woman relax. And for some women of color, having a doula who looks more like them can be reassuring. But Jones says it's also about personal preference.
I'm not kind of a hippie granola kind of doula. You know, it's just not my thing. And I tell them that. You know, I say, if you want hippie granola, maybe you should get one of those young white girls because I don't carry a bag of stuff around with me with herbs and potions. And I just don't do that.
Newly trained doula Traver Riggins is parked in front of a shelter meeting a client who didn't want her name on the air. She's 7 months pregnant and homeless.
I do want a natural birth, mostly without medications, unless something really bad happens, but I'm sure I'll be able to do it.
Take some deep breaths.
With her daughter in the back seat, Riggins leads her client through some relaxation exercises.
You even let the rest of the day just melt away for just a couple minutes.
They've got a couple of stops to make today, to the hospital to meet the client's doctor, and then to a resource center called Homeless Prenatal Program. Before being connected with Riggins there, the client said she had never even heard of a doula.
It's just disappointing that a lot of low-income families don't know about doulas and midwives.
Next week, the two will work on a birthing plan. When the baby is born, Riggins will support her client's recovery and aid her in caring for her newborn. Riggins isn't getting paid for any of this, but for now she's okay with it.
This is not something that I can do that's sustainable, but it's something that I must do. It's not that I don't want to serve the community that can pay me. That's just not who I think needs me. You know, like I know that there's a community of birthers who need me, especially because I'm willing to be there for them, that can't pay.
When Riggins thinks back on her labor, she remembers being surrounded by faces who didn't look like hers, and having to deal with doctors and nurses who seemed exasperated by her desire to have an unmedicated birth. Although she never had a doula by her side, she's now determined to be that support for the women who may need her most.
No! Oh, no! Don't.
Can Mommy help you? Let me help you.
For Cross Currents, I'm Leela Day.
That story originally aired in 2015. Find all our stories at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Now we'd like to share some global thoughts from our local newsroom. They come from visiting journalist Jürgen Klemm, a professional broadcaster from Estonia who's spending this year working with us here at Cross Currents. His nation borders Russia, and Estonia was part of the Soviet Union until 1991. We've been learning a lot from Jürgen's perspectives on life in the U.S., and we think you will too. Here's Jürgen.
Two Estonians sit in a bar. First beer. "So, how have you been?" The other guy just grunts. Second beer. "How's the family?" The other guy grunts again. Third beer. "And how are things at work?" The other guy finally gives in and says, "Did we come here to drink or talk?" This anecdote pretty much describes any Nordic culture, Estonians as well. According to the stereotype, people in the north aren't too talkative. They keep to themselves and in public places or social situations feel perfectly comfortable staying silent. You can say that Estonian culture is a culture of silence. What I mean with this is that for us, silence can carry as much meaning or information as words. Silence is as natural a part of conversation as talking, and silence can be an answer as well as a question. Lack of words does not mean absence of information, and this can be a difficult concept to explain to anyone outside this culture. Even today, my fellow Estonians are not considered especially fluent in small talk because historically there has never been a need for a conversation for its own sake. Small talk is explained as a means to manage interpersonal distance and as a bonding ritual. People in my part of the world live in small communities separated by thick woods with everybody minding their own business, so interpersonal distance is big and spread out and no bonding needed, preferably. Breaking the silence isn't something we always consider a good thing. Quite the opposite. Unnecessary conversation can even be an impolite intrusion of privacy. It has been difficult for me to adapt to this lack of silence in a cultural context foreign to me. Living in San Francisco has been an experience of overwhelming amounts of information. People talking to each other on the streets, huge billboards and advertisements. The constant flow of entertainment and commercials on the radio, on the TV and online. It seems as if my engagement is expected everywhere I go. I don't want that. I'm not saying that keeping silent and keeping others at a distance is a universally good thing. What I am trying to say is that if we forget the value of silence, we risk finding ourselves in the midst of devalued information, don't we? Since I've been working as a journalist, I've always kept in mind a story I heard about something that happened on April the 18th, 1930. It was 6:30 p.m. and it was time for the BBC news broadcast. But then the newscaster announced, "Good evening, today is Good Friday, there is no news." That guy is my hero, and saying these words on air is the pinnacle of my professional ambition. It had been apparently judged that nothing newsworthy had happened that day. Piano music was then played instead of the current affairs update for a couple of minutes before normal scheduling resumed. Would a day without news be a good day? Or are we afraid of the silence?
That's KALW's Jürgen Klemm. Today's production team also includes Lila Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Olivia Henry, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, Claire Strempel, and Beatrice Thomas. The show was engineered by James Rowlands, and the line producer was Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet.